End of the Line with Jeff Rentz. A detour to reality. An inside look at the critical issues of our times, including health, nutrition, and alternative medicine, the UFO and alien question, and political intrigues and controversies. Here's Jeff.
Good evening once again, everyone. In order for us to understand how we as a nation and a world got to the state of affairs we are currently in, it is always advisable to look to the past. And to that end, we occasionally do just that with one of the most unusual authors on the scene today. His pen name is simply Guru Das, and his book is entitled Treason, The New World Order, a remarkable exposé of the global elite which seeks to exert overwhelming control of our lives and of our political and economic institutions. Tonight, another visit from Guru Das, and another revealing look into not only our recent past, but also into what our very near future may hold for us if the apparent plans of the global elite to reduce the world's population are fully implemented. This will be a rather shocking program for many of you, and we are not here to tell anyone how to think, rather to lay out information for your consideration and your evaluation. So without further delay, let's say hello once again to Guru Das.
I would like to point out the intimate relationship between socialism, especially Fabian socialism, which developed in England in the latter 1800s, early 1900s, and their alignment with the corporate people pushing for this one-world government. People in this category include H.G. Wells,
right,
Bertrand Russell, George Bernard Shaw. They were in general part of the London School of Economics, which was set up specifically to develop central economic planning and government control over people's lives. Now, the issue of overpopulation, food shortages, environmental concerns are linked together in that these are what I call phony excuses, showing why supposedly we need this new world order or one world government so that the elite people will guide the populace and have a better life, which of course is not what would happen. Now, the first statement I'd like to mention is from George Bernard Shaw. He wrote a book in 1928, The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism.
Well, there's a title for you.
Yes,
I don't think that would be a bestseller today for some reason.
He said that people would be forcibly fed, taught, and employed even if they didn't like this. But if it were discovered that you had not character and industry enough to be worth all this trouble, you might possibly be executed in a kindly manner.
Hmm.
Now, the next statement is from H.G. Wells, and he wrote a book, I think it was about 1902, called Anticipations of the Reactions of Mechanical and Scientific Progress Upon Human Life and Thought, which is a hell of a title.
There's another one, that's right.
And in that, he made the following statement. The ethical system which will dominate the world state will be shaped primarily to favor beautiful and strong bodies, clear and powerful minds, and to check the procreation of base and servile types. The new ethics will hold life to be a privilege and a responsibility, and the alternative to right conduct between living beautifully and efficiency will be to die. The men of the new republic, which is what he called the one world government, will have little pity and less benevolence. They will hold that a certain portion of the population exists only on sufferance, and I do not foresee any reason to suppose that they will not hesitate to kill when that sufferance is abused. The men of the New Republic will not be squeamish either in facing or inflicting death. They will have an ideal that will make killing worth the while. They will have the faith to kill if deterrent punishments are not used at all in the code of the future. The deterrence will be good scientifically caused pain.
Wow. And there's another mouthful. I tell you, it was all laid out there, and this by H.G. Wells.
Yes, and when he's talking about causing good scientifically caused pain, that's hinting at the CIA mind control atrocities that have been going on for dozens of years in this country and in Europe.
Well, the mind control aspect of our world in these late 1990s is one that commands a great deal of attention from anyone who's doing serious inquiry into what's going on in the world. Let me read you, if I can, one real quick thing. I got a letter today. This is very interesting. In Southern California, our power company is called the Southern California Edison Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I should put a caveat out here that we're certainly open to hearing from anybody from SCE at any time. The letter said, "Dear Mr. Blank, I have become aware of the disturbing fact that Southern California Edison Company is participating in covert electromagnetic testing programs. The Southern California Edison Company is presently utilizing transformers that are operational platforms for advanced electronic equipment. Concealed within or on the cylindrical casings of the company's operated transformers and or dummy transformers are highly sophisticated electronic devices. These devices generate focused emissions of electromagnetic energy which are aimed and discharged by a fire control tracking system targeting human beings. The Department of Defense refers to such technologies as, quote, directed energy systems. This particular form research qualifies as covert testing on involuntary human subjects." That's just the first paragraph, and I think H.G. Wells would not be surprised by this kind of text.
Someone sent you a letter stating that today.
Yes.
Is that some kind of open policy that the company has?
This is a letter directed to Southern California Edison asking for a reply, and to date no reply has been forthcoming. There's a lot of supporting documentation with it. We won't go into that. But the point is that wherever technology can be brought to bear to control the masses, it seems to be being exactly addressed in that way.
Well, I strongly agree. Control, cut down the population, use propaganda as a vehicle of mind control, and for a smaller number of the population, use direct torture and real atrocity, Nazi-type atrocities.
You know, the thing is that we also talk about the word control, Guru Das, and I think we should substitute the word influence, because that's really what a lot of this stuff does. It can influence and predispose people towards certain behaviors, mindsets, moods, and physical dispositions. It's not as if we're being turned into automatons and robots, but the technology is so subtle and so pervasive that the potential is to really influence the masses in a profound way, in ways that the masses wouldn't necessarily even be aware of.
I would say both words are relevant. And just about 2 weeks ago, I read an amusing little story showing how extreme the control will be in the coming police state. The International Convention of People Who Act as Santa Claus took place recently in Copenhagen, Denmark, and they were very angry and they protested before the Danish government because the central government for the European Commission for the whole European Common Market has recently passed a law specifically stating how long Santa Claus beards must be.
Well, there you go.
Even the beards of Santa Claus are going to be totally controlled in the coming world government.
Nothing is sacred.
No.
How interesting.
Now, speaking of H.G. Wells, in 1928, he wrote a book called The Open Conspiracy, Blueprints for a World Revolution. I mean, I have long felt that this is no conspiracy when you talk about these things, because any dictionary will tell you the word conspiracy is something being done in secret. And as this title suggested, these corporate and political traitors openly talk in hundreds of books and journals and speeches about what they plan to do.
They do indeed. Time for our first break, Guru Das, and
okay,
we'll be right back in about 2 minutes, so stay tuned. Welcome back, everyone. Talking to Guru Das tonight. He's quoting from many books tonight. His own book is entitled Treason, The New World Order, and the title pretty much tells it all. Guru Das talking about the plans to reduce the world's population to a, quote, more manageable level, end quote, at least in terms of the big business folks who seem to be setting most of the agendas for us economically, politically, and socially.
Just mentioned the book has 833 footnotes, quotes from 885 sources, 319 warnings, and 104 solutions.
How many warnings?
319.
I see.
And I draw from the left and right. I don't feel one should be an ideologue, strictly reading only certain literature. And in a couple of minutes, I'll quote something which will express a good example of why you should look on the full political spectrum as you research a political topic. Anyway, we were discussing H.G. Wells, one of these early Fabian socialists, and it turns out that our President Franklin Roosevelt was a strong follower and believer in what H.G. Wells said. This is known because the H.G. Wells literary collection, is at a university in Illinois, and some people have gone there and studied it.
Mm-hmm.
And on December 4, 1933, Roosevelt wrote Wells saying, "I have read with pleasure and profit almost everything that you have written. You are doing much to educate people everywhere, and for that I am grateful." And then on February 13 of 1935, he said, "How do you manage to retain such extraordinarily clear judgments?"
Wow.
I mean, promoting this one-world government,
yeah,
taking away our Constitution and all our rights, and Roosevelt shows his true colors.
Yeah, he's quite a fan, indeed.
Yes. Now, Bertrand Russell is another character.
Well, he is. You should tell people, before we get into this, I'm sure you're going to, but let's really delineate who Bertrand Russell was. He was hailed as a genius by the intelligentsia for better than half a century, for openers.
Well, he was one of these people who had a great intellect and little morals, who looked down on the common man. This was expressed fairly often, certainly not always, but fairly often in his writings. One of his favorite quotes was, he called people useless eaters, which is a hell of a statement for someone to make, to put it mildly.
He was one of the original elitists, to be sure.
Oh, very definitely. I mean, a classic example of an elitist, the high intellect, no moral values, just really was contemptuous of the average person.
That's the word.
Yes, very much so. Now, in the 1953 edition of his book, The Impact of Science on Society, he made a remarkable statement. This statement was not in the first printing of the book. I think that was 1951, and I haven't yet checked if they left it in future printings. But this is what he said. "I do not pretend that birth control is the only way in which population can be kept from increasing. War has hitherto been disappointing in this respect, but perhaps bacteriological war may prove more effective. If a black death could be spread throughout the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full. The state of affairs might be somewhat unpleasant, but what of that? Really high-minded people are indifferent to happiness, especially other people's. There are three ways of securing a society that shall be stable as regards population. The first of that is that of birth control. The second, that of infanticide, killing babies, or really destructive wars. And the third, that of general misery, except for a powerful minority." And then he went on to describe the need for this one-world government. When you read such outrageous statements, you can appreciate why I started with Patrick Henry's quote.
Good. Guru Das, apparently Bertrand Russell was not pleased with the carnage of World War II.
That's exactly correct. World War I, World War II, it wasn't enough. He made it very clear. Germ warfare and killing of babies. And, of course, that has gone on in the 20th century, especially in recent years, as we see. I mean, there have been some trials of what's coming, of what's planned in recent years, and I refer to Cambodia and Rwanda. Those were deliberately set up and planned. They were trial runs for the real killing that's going to come if these people are not stopped. And part of the problem in discussing this is that this is so outrageous.
It really is. We have to pause now. Again, Guru Das for news. And we'll be back in just about 3 minutes with more here at the end of the line. All right, we are back talking with Guru Das about things that sound so unbelievable as to be unbelievable, right?
Well, that is part of the problem, trying to get people to wake up to the current threat that we live under, the fact that we're going to have a Holocaust worse than World War II if this insanity is not stopped. I mean, the people planning this have been carrying out parts of the plan in many different areas, and they're extremely fanatical and dedicated, and they're not going to stop unless people stand up and force it to stop.
And we wonder how our government, quote-unquote, could participate in something like that. Let me read something again real quickly here for you, which I know you're aware of. In the early 1970s, Henry Kissinger wrote a top-secret document, National Security Memorandum, NSM number 200, which was declassified quietly in the last 5 to 7 years. In that document, Kissinger indicated that depopulation should be the highest priority of U.S. foreign policy toward the Third World. This memorandum, which can be obtained from the U.S. National Archives, again was declassified in around 1990. That was adopted by the National Security Council as official U.S. foreign policy toward the Third World. This is a classic example of the secret government in action, because none of this was known to Congress, and certainly it was not known to the American people. Let me read a couple of quotes now. These are direct quotes from this NSM number 200. Reduction of the rate of population in these states, Third World states, is a matter of vital U.S. national security. The U.S. economy will require large and increasing amounts of minerals from abroad, especially from less developed countries. That fact gives the U.S. enhanced interests in the political, economic, and social stability of the supplying countries. Wherever a lessening of population can increase the prospects for such stability, population policy becomes relevant to resources, supplies, and to the economic interests of the United States. There it is.
One more expression of what is planned and what is coming, which again is why we must educate ourselves and stop this insanity.
And you mentioned earlier Dr. Leonard Horowitz, his really brilliantly researched book called Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. And in that book, that man has assembled some overwhelming documentation that folks out now listening to this program who are saying, no way, no chance, do your research, read, and then make an informed decision. Whatever it may be, at least do the research first. And that's what Guru Das has done, put his research where his mouth is in his book, Treason, the New World Order. Go ahead.
That book is a practical expression showing a particular program being carried out in reference to what all these different people for decades have been saying they intend to do. Now, in 1968, the Club of Rome, which is one of those European corporate front groups, issued a study concluding that civilization would collapse if the death rate was not increased and the birth rate needed to be lowered. And certain people, such as John Coleman, have seen this report called Global 2000. And basically what they plan to do, as described in this report, is to kill several billion, that's B, not M, several billion people by the year 2050. The logic of all of this is to have a more comfortable world for our global elitists, our corporate masters, so they can be pleased with things.
Well, the bottom line is the smaller the herd, the easier it is to control.
Well, that's a very relevant issue indeed. Now, Paul Ehrlich is a very famous individual, has written several books. His wife is a member of the Club of Rome. In his most famous book, The Population Bomb, written around 1968, He said the population will drop from one of two solutions. The birth rate will be lowered, or the death rate solution will be used through war, famine, pestilence. That, of course, ties into what Russell said. Now, he also said the time of sugar-coated solutions is long gone. And I saw him on a PBS documentary last year, and he said, if you don't solve the population problem, the environment will collapse and our civilization will go along with it. This, again, is part of this phony excuse strategy, bringing forth reasons as to why there needs to be more government control over the people and why they have to cut back the population.
You know, he's right there blaming the number of people on the planet for the environmental problems, when in point of fact, the environmental crisis has been caused by big business from day one.
Amen. Now, he also made a remarkable statement in another book where he said it might be necessary to add a sterilant to the drinking water or staple foods. And it might be necessary to sterilize the entire population, giving the antidote to a select few. Once again, you see the logic of the elitists. Now, this is such a remarkable statement, I just want to mention that is in his book, Population, Resources, Environment, Issues on Human Ecology, published in 1970 on page 204. Again, this material is very shocking, but the evidence is there. These different people make these outrageous statements, and it comes out year after year.
And they've been making them for the better part of a century now.
Indeed. Now, as a fair number of people are aware, the UN has its population control activities, and it gives out money for birth control around the world. And the liberal magazine New Republic had a very interesting article in the October 30, 1995 issue, starting on page 23. And this is an example of the value of reading from the left and right together to understand things. And it described the UN's activities in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Rwanda, where very large numbers of people died in famine and war. And it didn't go into any of these quotes and philosophical background that we're discussing now, but it did note that on a practical level, in each of these three instances, the UN's actions seemed very deliberately set to make things worse, and that many more people died as a result of what the UN did and did not do. So again, it's just one more expression as you gather evidence as to what the plans are.
All right, we're going to take our next time out, Guru Das, and come back and continue with more specifics here about why many people believe the world population has been targeted for a massive reduction in the next 25 to 50 years. All right, we're back. Our phone number here, toll-free, of course, as usual, 1-800-298-8255, 1-800-298-8255. If you'd like to acquire a copy of Guru Das' book, Trees in the New World Order, 1-800-255-2665 is the phone number to call. 1-800-255-2665. Give me those statistics again, Guru Das. Footnotes, warnings. I like that.
Well, 833 footnotes, 885 quotes, 319 warnings, and 104 solutions. Now, the last time I was on, last fall, I said 317 warnings, but in going over the book, I made a mistake and I found two more.
Wow. Right.
I have the book marked up in great detail for referencing as I'm on different radio shows.
Uh-huh.
And the book is $14.95 plus shipping, and it's 320 pages. And for bookstores, distributors include Book People, New Leaf, Wisers, and Moving Books.
By the way, how have you been received on other radio programs? I'm curious.
Well, I've been on a bit over 30 shows at this point. I'll be on Bo Grice's show in 2 days and Chuck Harder for the second time next week. And all in all, I think it's gone rather well. The book has sold around 3,000 copies. It's not going to be on the bestsellers list, but it moves along.
We like to think that we have a very wide diversity of listener. I think we do. Our calls have proven that. Again, we're not here to propagandize any issue. We're here to put information out. This is more of a teaching vehicle than anything else, and I don't bill it as anything other than that. I really appreciate the amount of work that went into this book, as I do the work that goes into the books of other authors who have been on this program, and I'm very happy to bring this information out into the light of day. So with that said, please continue.
Okay, we were discussing the UN, and I'd like to read a statement by U Thant, who was the Secretary General of the UN in 1969 when he made this statement.
Spelled T.
Yeah, showing the concern about overpopulation.
Yes.
I do not wish to seem overdramatic, but I can only conclude that from the information that is available to me as Secretary General, that the members of the UN have perhaps 10 years left in which to subordinate their ancient quarrels and launch a global partnership to defuse the population explosion and to supply the required momentum to development efforts. And here again, you see the rush, the need for change. It just continues constantly. Although recently a number of experts have been stating, there was an article, for instance, in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago, that the estimates about population growth have been grossly exaggerated, and the world's population is not going to grow anything like had been expected.
You know, the issue of overpopulation in and of itself is full of holes if you look at it very carefully, because the entire population of the world, and this has been done mathematically, and we've said it on this program before, can actually be placed 2x2 on 50x125-foot-long lots large enough to sustain gardening and other agrarian enterprises to support those two people, plus a dwelling. The entire population of the world can be placed in that configuration, 2x2 on a lot in the state of Texas, all of it. So again, you think that, gee, we're living in this overpopulated world, but if you do the math, they can all fit in the state of Texas. Take a plane flight across this country someday of ours and look down. There's a lot of room out there. It has to do with resources, it has to do with control, and it has to do with money more than overpopulation. I remember Paul Stitt, the noted food scientist, being on this program, explaining how he went to work out of college, and a very bright and talented man, with a team for a large cereal manufacturer in this country. And all Paul Stitt did was devise a way to create pure protein by using natural gas. The cost of that protein per pound, 10 cents. What did he receive for that effort? He was fired.
That's a very revealing and, in many instances, a typical story. I mean, Whitehurst was just fired because he kept on complaining about the sloppiness of the FBI crime lab. Three people were transferred, and one person was fired when the results came out. He was right, so they shafted him.
Right, right. Well, that's what happens. So again, as Paul Stitt said, it really is not a question of hunger or overpopulation. It's a question of money. And you create an economical solution to a real serious problem and take away the profit potential from that problem, and you have nowhere to go with it.
Now, Paul Kennedy, in his book, Preparing for the 21st Century, summarized why there's this big population concern. He said overpopulation represented a threat to the nation state and the large transnational corporations. As you noted, with a very large population, it's harder to exert control and direct people as you want to. Now, another interesting article with an ominous title, The Population Threat, and that's in the winter 92-93 magazine, Foreign Affairs, which is the mouthpiece for the Council on Foreign Relations. And in the last year, I think last spring, they had an ad from a population control group in New Jersey funded by Rockefeller money.
We need to wrap it up.
How they wanted to get the population back down to what it was in the 1940s in the U.S.
Exactly. We have to pause, Guru Das, and we'll be right back with more. Okay, welcome back, everyone. We have just about 3 minutes here in the first hour, and we're going to go to the phones right now. John is on the line from Tampa Bay. Hi, John. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, I'm calling from my cell phone here.
great show. Always again, thank you very much, and thank you, the author, for having all your work that you're giving us.
You're welcome.
One question here is on the national ID card. How long before we get one? Is it going to be in a biometric form or some other high-tech thing? And also, how long before we move into a super smart card economy when cash is gone and we're going to be carrying these little bitty cards with these little bitty chips in them?
Okay, good question, John. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll listen on the radio.
Very good.
I just read recently that under the GATT agreement, in one of those little hidden clauses, all children born from January of this year have to have some kind of a number from day of birth, which is certainly moving in that direction. As for the exact timing when they're going to introduce these things, it's always difficult to be exact on the future, but they very definitely plan a moneyless society with smart cards. People in the military now have what is called a MARC, M-A-R-C card. This was introduced, I think, in Hawaii, and it's been a success as far as the planners are concerned, which was an obvious conclusion. And they're going to introduce that throughout the military, which is basically a sophisticated smart card. So that is coming. On one radio show I was on in Detroit, a person called up and said his best friend from childhood was a CIA agent, and that person told him that sometime before the year 2000, the president was going to announce before the nation, surrounded by his three-lettered agency heads, FBI, etc., that because of the great war on drugs and crime and such, they were withdrawing money from circulation, and we were all going to have ID smart cards.
Well, that's been predicted for years, and
it has indeed.
It's a pretty safe prediction to make that something like that will happen eventually. You know, we had David Adair on this program, and David last night said that a smart number is coming quite soon to all of our lives for greater convenience. We won't have a phone number for the cell phone, for the fax machine, for the home voice phone, and so on and so forth. We'll have one phone number for all those functions, and that phone number will be given, and we can take it with us wherever we go. We can use it as our own single solitary ID access number. And they'll sell that very easily to people.
Well, not only this smart card is coming, but they plan to put an implant into everyone. And that is already happening in different parts of this country and in Europe. German military people, a number of them have these implants. There have already been a few instances where in North Carolina, I read about one story where a German officer put his hand over the checkout machine, figuring it would be able to scan and read his wrist, his implant in his wrist. And the girl there had read the Bible and knew what that meant, and she started crying. This happened in New Mexico also, although I don't think anyone cried there, but there is a German base now in New Mexico, and a lot of these officers and enlisted men in the German Army have implants put into their wrist.
Well, the interesting thing is, once you sign up, of course, and enlist in the military, you have no say-so over what they do.
This is the mark of the beast, the 666 number spoken of in the Book of Revelation.
Well, you don't even have to go that far. I mean, it's clearly...
It's
clearly an element of control, pure and simple, and we are in an ever-escalating environment with that goal in mind. All right, we'll be back right after news with Guru Das and more phone calls for you here at the end of the line.